little harder this time. Good afternoon. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, February 5th, 2019. Let the record reflect the time is 3:33 p.m. Today we have present Senator Machicki, Senator Reinbold, myself, Chair Senator Schauer to my right, Vice Chair Senator Coghill, and we have Senator Kawasaki is running a little late. We'll announce when he shows up. I would like to remind committee members and those in the staff, if you would please, to silence or turn off your cell phones. The staff we have assisting today is going to be Carrie Cooperwriter over with Senate Records, and we have Eric Heimbigner with the Leo behind me, which I hope I didn't butcher his name too bad. Two items on the today's, well, we'll let the record reflect, Senator Kawasaki is here. We have two items on today's agenda. We'll be hearing Senate Bill 23, Appropriation, Supplemental Payments of Prior Year's PFD, and Senate Bill 24, PFD Supplemental Payments. Both are from the Senate Rules by request of the Governor. The presentations for both pieces of legislation will be led by Commissioner Bruce Tangeman with the Department of Revenue and Ed King, the Chief Economist with the Office of Management and Budget. First, we're going to go ahead and hear Senate Bill 23, Appropriation Supplemental Payments of Prior Year's PFD. We have Commissioner Tangeman on the phone. We're just going to check in and make sure that he is there. Commissioner Tangeman, can you hear us?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Thank you. And invite Ed King to go ahead and come on up to the table this time. And anyone else you need or your lifelines as you need them. All right. If both of you could go ahead and we'll just start with Mr. King, since you're here. Put yourself on the record, please.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ed King, and I'm the Chief Economist for the State of Alaska.
And Mr. Tangeman, if you would just go ahead and put yourself on the record, because we'll get to the time that you need to break in as required.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bruce Tangeman. I'm Commissioner Designee for the Department of Revenue.
Thank you. And just for the public that's going to be joining us from home, we're starting off the list with a number of rather large bills that are going to be heading our way, many from the governor and many of the top agenda items, but some of them are going to be rather contentious when we're talking permanent fund dividend, the permanent fund itself, crime, and then, of course, the budget battle that's coming up. So stand by. This will take some time to get through not only these bills but the others. And I also want to go ahead and tell you that there will be public testimony, but we're not going to get to that today. That will come up over the following weeks. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and invite Mr. King, I believe, is going to start with presentation.
I'll defer to Mr. Tangeman.
Okay. And Commissioner Tangeman, it sounds like you have been led up as the primary batter, so over to you.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Happy to be so. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's an honor to be before you. I wish I was there in person, but some personal matters took me out of state. And I do have a little bit of a cold, so I hope you can understand me okay. Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely correct. This, while these two bills in front of you, SB 23 and SB 24, are actually small bills, they're only two pages, but they're very critical in the cornerstone of what Governor Dunleavy campaigned on and what is truly near and dear to his heart. And it's not so much the payback of the PFDs themselves, but more restoring trust in government. So what you'll see over the coming hour or so is a discussion of why these bills are before this committee, and then Ed will walk through some of the technical details on how they actually work. I think a big part of this issue and why it is before you is that over the last few years, while the statutory calculation for the dividend had been working fine for the last couple decades, the last 3 years, the previous administration chose to go in a different route, and that's certainly their prerogative to do that. But this governor felt that Governor Dunleavy felt it was critical to correct that issue, and really it's only one part of the entire puzzle. Certainly the budget that we're all hearing about will be a big, big part of this entire puzzle. While the previous, over the last 3 years, while the dividend was reduced, the size of the government was not reduced significantly. When it comes to Governor Dunleavy's view on this, these go hand in hand. The dividend can be restored, but it's critical that the size of government be brought into check, in the state of Alaska begins living within their means. So while we will only be talking about this issue and how the mechanics of this bill, these bills work, please keep in mind that this is one part of a much larger discussion that come February 13th, all the cards will be on the table, and we'll be able to have that much larger discussion on what is the right course for the state of Alaska. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. King and have him walk through some of the technical parts of the bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Ed King again. If you like, I can start with the sectional analysis on Senate Bill 23.
It's your plan, so right. As you need to.
So, Mr. Chairman, the bill, Senate Bill 23, as Commissioner Tempkin was saying, is a relatively short bill. It's only two pages, and basically what it does is it's an appropriation bill that transfers money from the earnings reserve accounts into the dividend fund. So the first three paragraphs in Section 1 are those appropriations for the repayments of PFDs that were deficient from the calculations over the last 3 years. So Section 1, Paragraph A, is the appropriation for the 2016 dividend in the amount of $1,061 per eligible individual. And to be eligible, you had to have received your 2016 dividend and be eligible for the 2019 dividend, the 2019 dividend, which will be paid in October of this year. That's for fiscal year 2020. Section 1, Paragraph B does the same thing. It's the repayment for $1,289 for people that were eligible for the 2017 dividend and will be eligible for the 2020 dividend. Section 1, Paragraph C is the section for, is the paragraph for the appropriation in fiscal year 22, which will be for the money that was deficient in last year's PFD to the calculation. That amount is estimated to be $1,328, although we have been made aware that there may be a error in that number, so we're double-checking the calculation for that. Section 1, and then moving to the next section, the next four paragraphs, same section, next four paragraphs are appropriating the statutory dividend for the next four fiscal years, for the governor's first term. And so Section 1, Paragraph D authorizes the payment of the statutory calculated dividend for fiscal year 20. Paragraph E does the same thing for fiscal year 21. Paragraph F does the same thing for fiscal year 22. And Paragraph G does the same thing for fiscal year 23. Section 2 is contingency language. It says none of this matters if you don't also pass the bill. It actually pays the dividends to the people. So that's just contingency. It's effectively contingent on Senate Bill 24 or a bill similar that would be enacted into law that directs the Commissioner of Revenue to include the payments from that are appropriated in this bill with the dividends in those fiscal years. The Section 3 through 6 are effective dates. So Section 3 takes the effective date in the fiscal year in which it's pertains. So that is fiscal year 20 for the appropriation of the back payment for fiscal year 16, as well as the calculated payment for fiscal year 20. Section 4 does the same thing with the effective date of July 1st, 2021. That is the first day of fiscal year 21. And Section 5 does the same thing for the appropriation of the statutory of the calculated dividend for fiscal year 22. And everything else has an immediate effective date. So that's Senate Bill 23.
Okay.
And Senator, Mr. Chairman, these two bills are basically married. If you'd like to move into Senate Bill 24, or if the committee has questions on this bill before
we go there, we'll just make sure that we're kind of picking this apart, because I know that we're going to get into more of a discussion. So if anybody has questions at this time, specifically on 23, we'll stop. Okay. Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. King. Do you think this bill may perhaps be challenged by those that received a 2016 permanent fund dividend or the other years that are no longer eligible as a resident? What do you and have has that gone through a review through legal for constitutionality and other legal challenges?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, I'm an economist, so I will speak to numbers. I'll defer to the commissioner to speak to policy, and we will have a legal team that's available for legal questions. They aren't available today, but at a future date, they will be available. So, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, I'd ask Commissioner Tangerman to answer that question.
And Commissioner Tangerman, this is Senator Schauer. You are welcome to jump in just to, for purposes of discussion. If he says you can go ahead or defers to you, just go ahead and speak. I won't ask for it. That will keep it a little bit cleaner.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much. Through the chair, Senator Michiki, this was vetted fully by the Department of Law. We believe it will stand up in court, and they can speak to it further at a future hearing, but it was vetted with the Department of Law.
Any other questions? All right, let's go ahead and rock on into Senate Bill 24.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So moving to Senate Bill 24. 24 is the bill that actually directs the commissioner to disperse the funds that are appropriated from the earnings reserve to the dividend fund. It's also a fairly short bill. There's only two sections. Section 1 has five paragraphs. The first paragraph, it's the entire bill amends uncodified law directing the Commissioner of Revenue to disperse the funds that are transferred into the dividend fund in addition to the calculated dividend for the year. So that is the one of the further sections. But Section 1 just directs the Commissioner, in the years that the appropriations are transferred from one fund to the other, the Commissioner will disperse those funds to the eligible Alaskans. Section 1, paragraph B, is specific to the dividend for fiscal year 20, the $1,061. And that just says that to determine eligibility, you just need to check to make sure that someone received the dividend in 2016 and is also eligible for the October 2019 payment. Section 1, paragraph C, is the same language but for fiscal year 21 with the $1,289. And then Section 1, paragraph D, is for fiscal year 22 with the $1,328 for that fiscal year. And then Section 1, paragraph E, just is making very clear that the the payments that are made cannot reduce the calculated PFD for those years. So they have to be layered on top of the PFD that are appropriated for those years. That's just some language that makes sure that happens. And then Section 2 is just a simple effective date clause.
Commissioner Tangerman, do you have anything you want to add at this time?
No, sir, Mr. Chair.
Okay, we'll open it up for questions then. Complete on Senate Bill 24 specifically. Senator Coghill.
So, just trying to think this thing through. the Permanent Fund Corporation is going to have these draws taken out of them, but they are going to have to change the calculation. Permanent Fund Corporation talked about how that might look on the management of the dispersion?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, I believe the question was related to the asset allocation and management of the permanent fund, or specifically the calculation for the disbursement of the dividends?
I think the calculation will be statutory unless we change that statutory. So then it's just a matter of the management within the permanent fund on doing the disbursements, the calculation they have to do on cash available, some of the kind of the more the managerial parts of it. So just give me a concept of what the permanent fund has been telling you based on this bill.
Senator Coghill, through the chair. So if this bill were to pass, then as soon as the appropriation were to be made, it would be booked as a liability for the corporation to manage around. And the permanent fund dividend division would manage the transfer from the corporation to the dividend fund. That the date when that would happen would be in line with when the disbursements happen, usually in September when that transfer is made. And so the liability would be booked by the corporation, and they would have to manage the assets so that they had adequate liquidity to make that transfer.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I think when it's our turn to talk to the Permanent Fund Corporation, we should probably talk about what that does to the liquidity, how they see to manage it. And so when it's our turn to talk to them. The other thing is, at this point, we're going back and we're adding the value from years past. My guess is those who are recipients, it comes to their present year tax liability. There would not be any lingering tax liability, Drew.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, that would be correct. It would be booked as income for federal tax purposes in the year in which you receive the payment.
But we're just cleaning up our books, so to speak, but their tax liability would be the same, basically.
That would be correct. Yes, Senator Coghill, through the chair.
Senator Machicki, you have a question, I think?
Well, yes, thank you. That may not necessarily be the case, depending on if they trip into the next tax bracket for the additional dollars in the year they receive it. Isn't that correct, Mr. King?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, it would, if they are pushed into the next tax bracket within the year that they're receiving it as income, then yes, they would have a higher tax liability, but it would not be an amendment to a previous year's tax return.
That's why we're here. Senator Ramble.
Okay, so my question is, these repayments over the next few years, how is that going to impact the long-term dividend?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, yes, by removing money from the earnings reserve, then there is a smaller balance in the fund that's spinning off returns. So if we can turn to the slides, if you like, Mr.
Please.
Chairman. Turning to the slides.
Page 4?
On page 4. And sorry, we don't have it for the camera, but slide 4 is doing what I believe your question is asking, Senator Reinbold. And on the right where the PFD is, what you can see is that the blue bars represent the scenario in which the bill were to pass and the funds were to be dispersed. And what you can see is that in the first 3 years, of course, there are the larger payments because of the additional dividend. But in the further years to the right, the blue bar is below the orange bar being the status quo. And the reason why that is happening is because the smaller fund balance means that there are smaller returns, and the smaller returns, the returns are how the PFD is calculated. So there would be smaller PFDs in the future. I know, speaking for myself, I would prefer to have the three payments today than or in the next 3 years versus the smaller and absorb the smaller PFDs in the future. But every Alaskan is able to make that decision for themselves and have their own opinions. But yes, that impact, there's no denying that impact does exist.
Senator, before you ask the next one, because I know you had several, can you validate where the data came from? So was this from Department of Revenue, the Permanent Fund Corporation itself, Legislative Finance? How were these numbers validated that show us on these charts what the impact of the fund is?
Mr. Chairman, these graphics on this slide were produced by the Economic Research Group, by me personally, at the Department of Revenue.
Senator Ramble, please.
Well, I was going to ask, and I know this isn't finance. I get it. But what's the fiscal notes?
Senator Ramble, through the chair, there is a fiscal note on Senate Bill 24, and that is just related to the disbursement of the funds. And that $24,000 is intended to pay for some programming costs, just so that the Permit Fund Dividend Division can determine who is eligible and make those payments. The payments will be made in a single transfer or single check, but there is some programming that would need to occur.
Senator Rebel.
I'm going to rephrase my question. What's the draw on the earnings reserve?
Senator Reinbold, I'm sorry for misunderstanding the question. The total draw on the earnings reserve, the way that the bill is currently structured, would be about just a little bit less than $2 billion. And that's a little bit less than, just going back a slide on that presentation, actually going back two slides onto slide 2. So the way that the bill was written, with the $1,061 per person in fiscal year 20, rather than doing the appropriation of the amount that was different than what the calculated amount would have been, is intended to capture the fact that there are people that 3 years ago received their dividend that have either passed away or moved away that will not be receiving their dividend under this bill with the eligibility requirements that are there. And so the 639 or so thousand people that received the PFD in 2016, we're expecting about 530,000 of them to receive this bonus, quote-unquote bonus payment, if this bill were to pass. And that's a total of $565 million.
As many as you need, Laura. That's right here. Senator Reinbold, follow-up.
So I just, this is more for the public than probably for us, but I just want people to understand that the POMB is about a $2.9 billion draw, and this is on top of that. Is that correct?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, that is my understanding.
So just to conclude, so this is right about $5 billion with the POMB of $3 billion and then this bill of $2 billion. So it's about $5 billion.
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, the bill is not appropriating money all at once, and so doing it over 3 years. And so the fiscal year 20 impact would be that 2.9 plus this 565, so it would be more like $3.5 billion in fiscal year 20. And then the additional $683 million in fiscal year 21 would be on top of that POMV, which would be about $3 billion that year. So when you add it all up, it does get to that number, but we're also – because we have time to make money while we're spending money, it actually doesn't injure the fund balance by nearly as much as it might be considered if we just think of things as lump sum payments.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Coghill.
Just following on that line of thought, probably it would be helpful to us to show you've got an anticipated number of people that would be repaid based on those years. But you also are going to have to look down the horizon and see what the potential payout is going to be for those in Alaska. Have you figured that with a plus or minus?
Senator Coghill, through the chair, I can read that number into the record if you like.
Be helpful.
Could you also, as we do this, update this slide chart for the committee and get it back to us so as they're asking for further data, just to keep us abreast of that, plus for the public record as well, could you just add that in and update it, send it back?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks.
Senator Coghill, through the chair. The number that is estimated for the fiscal year 20 is $566,756,995, with a maximum appropriation. That is, if every eligible person in 2016 remained eligible in 2019, the maximum appropriation would be $682,839,753.
And that would, Mr. Chairman, be on top of the 565 back payment.
That would be the back payment.
So you're talking, at that point, you're talking just over $1 billion.
Senator Coghill, no, that number is the number that I was referring to. The 565 is just a rounded number of the number I just read.
So I was trying to add them up, that you would have a application year that is at what level plus the 565, and you were saying that it would end up at the 682?
Mr. Chairman, through the chair, Senator Coghill, the anticipated payment for the PFD in October of 2019, that's the fiscal year 20 dividend, is $1.9 billion. In this bill, if it were to pass, would add another $565 million on top of that for a total of $2.5 billion.
Mr. Chairman, that's actually what I was getting to.
Correct.
Because we're adding the 562 to a billion plus, right? And so we're talking about a billion and a half north of that every year's appropriation is what I was just trying to give myself a concept of what that check writing is going to be, because when we get the budget, we're going to have to think of it in that term.
Can I clarify this, I think, sure, for the public, because I think we're getting a little bit. So if we're on the same sheet of music, and I'm asking you to correct me, what we're talking about here is every year what we're going to have to appropriate as we go into the out years for the dividend itself, right? So let's just say it's $1.9 billion, and next year it was 2.0, and the year after that 2.1. You would be adding the 565, the 686, et cetera, on top of that. So that's your total bill, is I think the point you're trying to get across each year.
Okay. It would be Mr. Chairman, that's what I'm looking for is the cash draw on any given year, especially since we're going to do, if the policy goes, that we'd have over $500 million plus what we would normally pay, which is around $1 billion. So it looks like it's going to be $1.5 billion plus as you go forward per year.
Senator Coghill, through the chair, let me just step back for a second and maybe talk through the numbers, because I'm not quite following the numbers that you're referring to. So for fiscal year 20, we're expecting there to be a draw on the fund of $2.9 billion from the earnings reserve to the general fund for the purposes of the percent of market value. In addition to that, this bill would appropriate an additional $565 million. We're expecting that that fund will earn about $4.1 billion that year, so the total fund balance won't decrease. It'll actually increase slightly. There'll be a transfer to the principal if you do inflation proofing, but the fund itself won't decrease. So that's $3.5 billion of total draws from the ERA to the general fund and the dividend fund. In 21, fiscal year 21, the POMV would be about $3 billion plus the 682, I believe it was the number, so $3.7-ish billion total movement. And then in fiscal year 22, it would be a little bit more, about $3.8 billion in total. Once you get past that 23, then the additional appropriations go away. We've paid those off. So then the total draw comes down to closer to that $3 billion draw. And of that, the permanent fund itself, the permanent fund dividend, also begins to shrink. And that's just a product of the really good year that we had last year in fiscal year 18. That number will drop off of the five-year rolling average in 2024, so the permanent fund dividend will be smaller just as a natural consequence. That has nothing to do with the bill. So the amount of money that's coming out of the fund isn't any more than the 3.5 or so in the next 3 years and then $3 billion or so every year after that.
Mr. Chairman,
follow up.
That's the mechanics of it, taking it. You have the percent of market value, which is an endowment model, and we're just taking outside of that from the earnings reserve, putting in it. What I was interested in is, with the formula that we're using to pay a dividend, what would that normally be outside of the payment? Because I'm going to add this on top of it to look at what that annual appropriation is going to be. And, of course, to me, even though we're taking it outside mechanically of the earnings reserve, it's still a cash draw on the state. And I just want to know what that cash draw in gross is going to be.
Yes, Senator Coghill, then through the chair, I can provide those numbers to you. I think it might be easier to just put it in a table.
Thank you.
Before we go there, I think we've got another one to the left. Could you explain again for the public record, because I know that this comes up as a point of contention, the money in the first 2 years, where is the money that should have been allocated that was not allocated, the statute not being followed, the law? And it was left, I believe, but I wanted to get on public record, the first 2 years in the fund. The third year, I believe, was allocated. Can you just validate that and put that on the record for what is there and what is not?
Mr. Chairman, for all intents and purposes, the money that was not distributed is still in the earnings reserve.
For each of the 3 years?
Yes.
The third year, is that money still there or was allocated last year, as I understand it? But if not, correct me. I want to make sure we have that correct on the record.
Mr. Chairman, that money, last year there were far greater returns than there were distributions from the fund. So, in effect, the money still sits in the earnings reserve.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Machicki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year, there was money allocated out of the earnings reserve to the POMV that went to the general fund. So
I think that's what I'm trying to ask.
You can look at it both ways. The first 2 years, the money was not allocated to the general fund for paying the state's bills. The third year, it was. So whether it's those exact dollars that were transferred out or not is one's individual judgment. But last year, the money were actually used to pay a proportion of the bills for the state.
That may be a more clear way to say it. I think that's the point, is was the money allocated and used, or was it essentially left sitting in the fund?
Mr. Chairman, there was enough money appropriated from the earnings reserve to the general fund to pay a full dividend, although it wasn't transferred for the purpose of paying the dividends. So I agree with you that you can kind of twist the numbers however you want to make the statement, but in effect, the money that you can think of it in either way, I think accurately, that the money either sits still in the earnings reserve or that it was allocated and not appropriated.
Well, this is part of our chance to get this on the record and to debate it and pull it into the public light about what is where and make sure that when we're talking about this, we're talking about it accurately and correctly so that as we're arguing from one side or the other, we're arguing with good facts. And that's what I want to make sure that we're doing that as we go through the discussion. So, follow up?
I do.
Senator Mchicki.
So, I think it's important for the public to understand that the first 2 years, what was withheld from the dividends was not used to pay any operating costs. And in the third year, a proportion was. That's not my question, though. And the only reason that's important is because the POMV passed, and for the first time in the state's history, monies from the earnings reserve were used to supplement state spending for state services. My actual question is, in your assumptions on page 2, I just did the math. For FY20, you estimated 532,000 recipients that were eligible in FY20 for the FY16 PFT. Your numbers go down to 529,000 in FY21 and 530,000 for FY22. Why does that number not continue to come down as folks that were eligible in 16, 17, and 18 leave the state? Did you just sort of have to take a stab? It's hard to say. Or did you go through some sort of historic out-migration from the state in your assumptions?
Senator Mchicki, through the chair, we did do a historical analysis of what we tried to do is go back through time and look at a dividend payment year and then look and try to figure out how many of those people 3 years later also received their dividend. And when we did that kind of historical analysis, what we found is that there's about 17% of people that received a PFD in 1 year that drop off. Either they pass away or they move away and they're not receiving their dividend 3 years later. And so by applying that 83% kind of retention rate to the number of applications that were actually paid, we can come up to the numbers. The actual number of PFDs that have been paid have been decreasing over time. So the numbers in 2016 was 643,581. We're anticipating 534,172 will be receiving the additional payment. And then in 2017's payment, 640,248 people received their dividend. 83% of that number is 531,406. And then in fiscal year 18, it's 639,247 that received their dividends. So we are expecting 530,575.
Excellent. Thank you.
Senator Ramble.
Okay, so I'm not a big fan of doing public math, but I do have a question. So I do want to say I've been a believer in the statutory formula of the PFD that has been working for decades. I understand that that's not the way the budgets have worked the last couple of years, but at a high level, I want to make sure that people understand, because this is dealing with 3 years right now from what I can tell. But if we take a POMV draw of roughly $3 billion for the 2020 budget, for the 2021 budget, and the 2022 budget, my rough math is $9 billion. The next, we go into the paying of just the regular PFD, and I know this is not exactly the right number, but it's close, I think, roughly around $1 billion for dividends for three different years. So the regular dividend, which I think is around $3 billion. I know that could give or take. But then there's plus these bills that pay back, which is $2 billion. Well, at a high level, that's $14 billion. So part of me struggles with $14 billion, if we want to save the permanent fund and the earnings, because this, people are tending to think this is a spending account because of the POMB now, it is subsidizing state government pretty significant levels right now. So just, can you just see where did I go wrong, or is this math, public math, is this at a high level pretty good?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, the only, I guess if I was grading it, I would probably point out that the PFD payment is not in addition to the POMV, so it comes out of the POMV. So that if it is $3 billion a year for the next 3 years, yes, that would be $9 billion. And then adding these the payments for these bills would be another $2 billion. That would get you to $11 billion. But over the next 3 years, the fund is also anticipating to earn over $12 billion. And so the fund should not be injured in the way that it would sound like if the fund were not being invested for returns.
One question.
And yes, but could just on the math part of it, just because we're starting to do math in public, and I think we're all scared of that. God, you don't want a pilot doing math in public. Could you break that out as far as what Senator Reinbold is asking between the draw, the POMV draw, which is $2.9 billion this year, 3.0, 3.1, something along those lines. What comes out of that for the permanent fund dividend with the rough calculation and the fact of those total numbers? Because that, I think, I don't want to throw people off and they hear $14 billion and hang their hat on it based on what the actual dividend is. So can you break those out before her next follow-up question, please?
Mr. Chairman, I can do a little bit. I can tell you that the fiscal year 20 numbers are already kind of known. The $2.9 billion for the POMV is already a set number. And the number for the PFD payment, depending on what happens in the rest of this fiscal year, we are thinking it's going to be somewhere around 1.9. It might be a little bit less because of the poor quarter that we had in the fourth quarter of 2018. But we had a really good January, so maybe we're back on track. I'm not really sure. But we can use that number, 1.9. So you transfer $2.9 billion out of the earnings reserve to the general fund. From that, 1.9 goes to the PFD, and the other $1 billion pays for the general fund. And then in fiscal year 21, you have a similar situation where you have about $3 billion that's transferred and about $2 billion that's required for the PFD and about $1 billion that stays for the general fund.
So over 3 years, and I know this sounds repetitive at times, but I want to make sure we're breaking this down slowly and that the accurate information is being presented. The total over 3 years, roughly, for the permanent fund would be that about that $6 billion of the normal statutory calculation plus the extra $2 billion, roughly, to get the payback. So we're looking at about roughly $8 billion total over the next 3 years to make it even, if you will.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you might have missed the third year.
$2 billion, right?
It should be
for the 3 years.
$3 billion a year in transfers. So 369 plus 2 is 11.
I think I'm confusing the permanent fund dividend portion of it versus the total draw.
Is what Mr. Chairman, that would be correct, yes.
Okay. Copy that. Senator Ramble.
And all as I was going to say is my first sticky that I passed to my colleague on my right said $11 billion. So I thank you for correcting me, you know, in regards to that because that's important information to get out there, that POMV draw does include the permanent fund dividend. And so that was public math. It wasn't right. It's about $11 billion total. Okay, thank you.
And I think it's important to point out what you did as well, Mr. King, is that as this is happening, one of the concerns of some people be, well, you're just drawing the ERA down. However, the ERA is continuing to earn money. That money is being put into the fund, and then, of course, we allocate it as we decide to, right? So you're still looking at where those numbers could stay relatively even or even grow, depending on how things do. Could even go down if things go bad. So that's an important part of that. And I think it's also important to note as we look at the budgetary issues with this, how that impacts where we're headed is, for example, this year, $2.9 billion draw on the POMV model, $1.9 billion roughly goes to the dividends, about $1 billion is left over. So you added that to our revenue for this year, as we're discussing it in finance, was about $2.2 billion from oil and gas, which leaves us with our revenue model so-called today of about $3.2 billion. And it will be something, should be, roughly similar over the next few years, but of course those are numbers we can't predict because too many things could happen. Senator Machicki.
I keep hearing that little lawyer voice in the background that says past earnings are not an indicator of future returns, which is something that leads to my next question, and that is about stress testing your assumptions. And one of the problems that we have is, I mean, you're looking at the other body not yet being organized, the probability of whether or not we're able to deliver a three-quarter vote on the CBR, the potential for other legislators to support an unstructured draw from the ERA, did you stress test some of those possibilities, which could lead to a significantly lower earnings reserve balance and therefore could stress the ability for future dividend payments as well?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, turning to slide five of the presentation, there's a pretty flat line there that represents the risk of the depletion of the ERA. This is a stochastic analysis that we did, just running a Monte Carlo simulation, allowing the returns from the permit for corporation to be randomly selected out of a distribution of earnings. And we used the Callens estimates to do these model runs. And what we saw here was that in the baseline scenario where we're at today, assuming that we only draw the POMV and we don't dip into the earnings reserve for additional funding of government, the likelihood of the earnings reserve being depleted because of just random fluctuations in the marketplace is very low. It's about 99% of the time we didn't have a problem. With the $2 billion transfer over the next 3 years, that risk increases slightly. It increases to about 3%. So there is a little bit of an additional risk that's being assumed by having a smaller balance in the account. That said, the historic and definitely Senator Machicki, it's very true that past performance does not guarantee future results, but the past performance of the fund has been phenomenal, and they've averaged over 9.5% per year for the last 40 years. In the last 9 years, they've averaged 9.64%. And if you take out the 2009 negative 18, they've done really, really well. And they are now projecting, or at least for the purposes of planning, a 6.55% return on that fund, which historically is low in terms of what the fund has been able to perform in the past. So the ability, when we ran this analysis, we did it using Callen's estimates, that 6.55% and the standard deviation that they are applying. If you apply a distribution of past performance and select randomly from those 40 years, this goes to virtually zero. There's very little to no risk that we actually deplete the fund, even with the draw.
And just before you do the follow-up, just for the public, and not, I think you used the word Monte Carlo model. So not everybody understands what the terms are. So as you go through, especially in your specialty, could you just explain? You talked about Callum and the Monte Carlo model so that people know what you're doing and explain it for the public. It's the same thing with acronyms. I should have caveated that up front, but you were on a roll. I didn't want to stop you. So,
sorry, Mr. Chairman. The a Monte Carlo simulation is just instead of plugging in a number that you type in, you plug in a distribution of what numbers could be, and then you allow the computer to randomly select a number out of that pool of possible numbers that it can select. It's called the Monte Carlo analysis. So you can run, we ran, I think, 100,000 iterations, and of those, less than, 99,000 of them, we didn't have a problem.
And who is Callum?
Callum Associates is the is the consultant for the Permit Fund Corporation that provides them with their risk analysis and their advice on what they should expect for returns.
And since I've been getting my eyes poked out in finance for the last couple of weeks, I know who they are. Just want to be clear that not everybody does. So I just want to make sure that we expand that, because you say a number like, 100,000 iterations of the model, people go, this is more than just your opinion. You wrote it down on a piece of paper. That's why it can be important. So I just want to make sure we explain those things. And before we get to actually, we'll do your question, then I'm going to, one follow-up. Go ahead. Senator Machicki, sorry.
You answered every aspect of my question other than an unstructured draw by a legislature that could be in a very difficult position at the end of this session. And my request would be, and maybe I should ask this in finance because I'll see this bill in finance, just to protect the permanent fund dividend, I would request that you run a model with some level of unstructured draw. I personally find it difficult to believe that we are going to deliver a three-quarter vote with the current makeup of the legislature, particularly observing the issues across the hall. And I would like to understand what that depletion looks like if the burn rate is expedited by an unstructured draw.
Senator Machicki, and Mr. Chairman, I can answer at a high level now, and we can speak more in depth in the Finance Committee. Mr. Chairman, Senator Machicki, the unstructured draw that's being requested by this bill if that is the extent of the unstructured draw, the draw in addition to the POMV, then the risk of depletion is hardly changed from whether we draw it or not. If we were to increase the draw by another $500 million or billion dollars per year into perpetuity, the fund will not be able to sustain that draw.
And I'll just, for purpose, hold on 1 second, Commissioner Tangent, but just for the purpose of this, I don't want to get too far in the weeds since we're not finance, but it, I think, is appropriate because we move on directly after this to ask questions that give us a chance for people to percolate on these things and think about them and ask good, hard questions before we move it. So just to be advised, this will be seen again where it will be vetted in finance as we go through the numbers, but not saying we shouldn't do them, just throw that out for the group. Before we go to that, I was going to ask for Commissioner Tangeman anyways. He's been quiet for a while, and apparently he cannot stand it anymore. So, Bruce, if you'd like to go ahead and jump in, please.
Yes, sir. You know me too well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And bringing it out of the weeds up to a higher level, that comment just recently is where I was going. And it does go to the entire picture. Again, we're seeing one small portion of correcting something that Governor Dunleavy felt was not done correctly and the law was not followed. Again, this is all contingent on the budget as well. When it comes to unstructured draws and stress testing the model, Senator Michicki and I have spent a lot of time in the models, and it does speak loudly to the fact that we are living beyond our means. If we continue to have huge draws of $1 billion just to meet the existing operating budget that and allows it to grow, that's the problem with the unstructured draw level. This portion that we're talking about, this bill, it's funds in the ERA that were not distributed over the last 3 years that sat there, earned a healthy rate of return, thank goodness, and now we're making whole on those back payments. The discussion that we will be having in the coming days around the budget is about how do we put in place a stable budget for the state of Alaska that does not rely on giant unstructured draws from whatever revenue source it is, UGF, CBR, ERA. I think it's Governor Dunleavy's perspective that you cannot extract enough revenue from the citizens of Alaska to support the budget we're looking at. And he doesn't believe that that's the next step we should be taking. The next step will be the budget, and that will be a very robust discussion as well. So I think once we have the budget on the table, then you can start stress testing the entire plan by Governor Dunleavy in that budget, including these 3 years of catch-up, what the revenue sources look like, and what a significantly reduced budget looks like in that model. And under previous scenarios, when we were only, you know, working around the edges on cuts of, you know, $25 million or $50 million to a, you know, $4.8 billion+ budget, yes, that did not reflect a big enough cut to support things like this. But by reducing the budget to the level that we see as appropriate, you can absorb things like this, and as Mr. King said, allow the earnings reserve and the permanent fund itself to continue to grow into the future. So that was just my 2 cents from 50,000 feet. Thank you, sir.
Commissioner Tangeman, I have another question for you. Because you opened the door, I would not have asked it, but now I'm going to. You talked about the size of the state and how that ties into what revenue could be generated to close the gap. And I ask that because we're talking about how much we're pulling from this and unstructured draw, how that would matter. Do you have anything off the top of your head as you went through these two bills that you would throw out as a number of what that revenue would be, how that would change things?
Mr. Chairman, the amount of revenue that could be drawn out of the private sector?
Yes, and I know we're probably saying the T word here, so I didn't really want to go there, but I know you were kind of alluding to it. So what is a number that you were looking at in this discussion of figuring out whether or not this was achievable over the next, well, you could really take it out to even 5 or 6 years because of how the bill is structured for what you would pay structurally from the fund. So did you have a number that you used as you were talking about that? And again, I only say this because you opened the door by mentioning it. So I'm just curious if you used one at all in your discussions of these bills. Any kind of tax revenue, I'll just say it. It's out there. So, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to address that issue because it is, you know, the 800-pound gorilla sitting over in the corner right now. We are not proposing new revenues coming out of the gate because the focus needs to be on the budget. We're turning the conversation a bit on its head by saying, how much available revenue do we have? How much of the budget will that support? What's constitutionally required for expenditures, et cetera? And that's the $3.2 billion number that you're hearing. We're not automatically saying, okay, we need to find $1 billion in taxes right now. What we're saying is, here's the available revenue, and here's that spending level that can be supported with that available revenue. So we're gonna have the conversation of, okay, what is not included in this budget? What would Alaskans like to have included in this budget? And how are we gonna pay for it? So instead of saying we need a tax of maybe $250 million, maybe $700 million, could be $500 million, we don't know what the tax is because we don't know what that bogey is for the budget. We're starting with step one. Here's the revenue. Step two, how much of a budget can that revenue support? Now the conversation will focus on what do Alaskans want and how are we going to pay for it? So again, we will talk about that down the road. I think it's our goal to really focus the discussion on what's sustainable with the current revenue stream we have.
And to be clear for the record, so far you believe that is achievable, this plan, I'm guessing clearly because you presented it, is achievable without starting the discussion of taxes yet. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. When you look at the actual numbers for the next 3 years to correct this issue, it's just under $2 billion. And as I did do the math, you know, that's not a static number, the earnings reserve, the permanent fund. It will continue to grow over the coming years. So we believe it's a net increase to the ERA and the permanent fund, even with this $1.9 billion or so in additional draws.
Thank you. And I believe we'll go to Senator Reinbold was standing by.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go ahead and get into policy, and then I'm going to get into numbers. I'm so you kind of know where I'm coming from in regards to this. I'm still concerned about a natural disaster like we had with the earthquake, which is one of the reasons I've been a pretty bold no vote on the budget the last 4 years. Still concerned about an international threat. You know, we have concerns on the horizon if you're paying attention to JASC and listening to what's going on with Russia, China, North Korea, et cetera. I mean, there's still a potential. And I just am a huge believer that we need to have reserves in the bank. We have very serious concerns on the Arctic boundary up north. I mean, I don't forget about these kind of things. So those are the things that weigh heavily about the future of Alaska. And what's most important is our public safety and making sure we've got reserves. When we turn now to policy, the POMV, I haven't been a big believer in the POMV because it's a $3 billion draw for government. I know some of it goes to the permanent fund dividend, which I support the statutory formula, but it is a concern to me because it is drawing down. I'm going to ask you two questions in a minute. Although I love that we're open for business and trying to attract business and investment here in stable taxes, I like that. I like that he's going in and being tough on budget reductions. I think that's a hard thing to do. And he does have ultimately the red budget pen, so I hope we're not here past 90 days arguing and then where he can just go red line item anyway. So that's kind of a big picture. Where my questions to you are, one, I don't feel like slide five is a fair slide, and this is why, where you show zero to no risk, you know, because this is risk of depleting the earnings reserve account. That's depletion. This is a permanent fund earnings reserve. So my opinion, it's not even an opinion, it's just it is drawing down. It is. When you're spending $11 billion in a three-year period on the POMV and on dividends and dividend payback, it is drawing down. That is a fair statement. Is that correct?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair. So turning back to slide four, on the left side of that slide, there's a graphic that shows the ERA balance. The orange bars are the status quo, and you can see that $16.5, $17 billion that's in that fund, and that maintains pretty much flat. And that is because with the transfer to the from the earnings reserve of $3 billion for the PLMV and the transfer from the earnings reserve to the principal for inflation proofing, the $4 billion that's transferred out of the earnings reserve is basically equal to the amount of expected earnings in the fund. And so as the time moves progresses, the fund balance does not shrink under the assumptions that the Permanent Fund Corporation is providing. The blue bar represents the if this bill were to pass, what that fund would look like. And again, this is using just the static assumptions from the Permanent Fund Corporation. And what you can see is that the balance is basically $2 billion lower. And that reflects the fact that we're drawing $2 billion out of the account. However, it doesn't put us on a path where the earnings reserve would be depleted unless we were to make additional draws to the fund or get significant reductions in earnings relative to what was being expected.
Follow up.
Okay, so I kind of see where you're going with this. You're only talking about the paybacks of the dividend and keeping this embargo just to 23 and 24, where I'm stepping back and including 26 in it as well from previous years, SB 26. And that's where I'm going in the big picture. I understand that you're focusing on just these two bills, which is the purpose you're here, but why we're stepping back and risk of depleting the ERA. So this slide should say with SB 23 and 24.
Senator, Mr. Chairman, I would defer to Senator Machicki if he has a point.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The numbers that you see on page 4 are including the POMV, the results of Senate Bill 26.
Right.
And I, if I can, I want to clarify something. Senate Bill 23 and Senate Bill 24 about returning the traditional statutory calculation, I don't know that I call that a unstructured draw for the reasons that you stated. My warnings and the reason for passing an POMV, percent of market value plan, is it was obvious that the earnings reserve is going to be a source because the CBR has been dramatically depleted by $13.5 billion over 4 years. The reason for my statement is a warning to the legislature that unstructured draws by the legislature from the earnings reserve will put the Alaska Permanent Fund and the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend at extreme risk. So whether or not legislators support this, the fact is we have to gather together on the remainder of the plan and ensure that unstructured draws do not become, I guess it's like a teen, the reason you don't want them to have the first cigarette is because the second becomes that much easier, right? So we have to continue to warn the legislature about unstructured draws on the earnings reserve. That was the primary reason for my statement. So if I keep pushing back on you, it would be very helpful for those of us that are going to take it to the mat to protect the permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend that you run a risk analysis of additional unstructured draws above Senate Bill 23 and 24 and 26 so that the legislature understands what kind of risk it does to the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Did you want to follow up on an answer with that, or does that clear it up for you?
Mr. Chairman, I can make just a broad point that, yes, with the permanent funds percent of market value law that is in place, and given the assumptions that the Permanent Fund Corporation has about their earnings, the account is stable. But any additional draws put that stability at risk. And as soon as you start making additional draws, that reduces your earning power. And if you want to maintain the same level of budget with less earnings, it's going to spiral pretty quickly. And so as long as the structure draw that's in place remains in place, then the risk that is highlighted on slide 5 is correct. And we are demonstrating that there is some additional risk associated with taking $2 billion out of the account. The governor feels like that risk is appropriate and that he's willing to take it. If you tried to take $2 billion additional dollars every year or even $500 million additional every year above what we currently do, there is severe risk that account will not be able to sustain that kind of draw. And I'd be happy to run a couple of scenarios at different budget levels that shows what that risk does.
Thank you. Before we get there, Senator Coghill, so Senator Reinbold, did you have a follow-up to that? You were good. So I would say the general warning, and this is, I believe – in two things. One is I want to make sure we debate this from what the law is, because we are stuck with that. If we talk about something and how it may impact it, that makes sense. But as a former Secretary of Defense said, he's like, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you want. So we are stuck right now with SB 26 and dealing with the model that we have. So unless we change the law. The other thing I would say with the general warning, which is applies to all of us, is the past performance does not guarantee future results, but the past performance of legislators with spending money, probably a generic warning of future results, is not so good. So we need to be the ones putting the handcuffs on ourselves, because we have not demonstrated that we're very good in at holding that back. Senator Coghill?
Thank you. Very well said. I'm going to go back to kind of the percent of market value. It's roughly a 5%. That can come out of this total valuation. You're reaching over, picking up these $650 million, basically. But of that, help me understand from your perspective of the formula that you're using right now on a pie chart, what would be kind of the dividend payout and what would be left for government? I think I heard you say it. I just wanted to take a look at a pie chart as you're doing it. And as we pick this up, what does that do to that year's pie chart?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, the current, just round numbers, the 1.9 out of 2.9 is somewhere around two-thirds of the money that's being transferred from the earnings reserve is going towards the dividend under the proposed statutory formula alone. If you layer on top of that the additional payment, I can't do the math in my head right now.
Would you like to get that?
I'd be happy to get it later.
I just wanted to. The general public to know that we're talking about a percent of market value, which is an endowment that allows 5% of the total value of the fund to come out. And at this point, the distribution would be a one-third, two-thirds. Two-thirds the dividend, one-third the government. And then we take these other years, we put $500 million or $650 million, depending on what year it is, add it really to that distribution, because we're going to write the check. But it's reaching into that what is called the unstructured draw. But it adds those years, it takes that off the table of what we would generally expect for keeping our government services. And that's going to be the tension. The governor said it loud and clear. I'll tell you what I do appreciate about what the governor did. The last administration said, we'll let government stay up and we'll let the tax be down, the pressure down on the people of Alaska. What this governor done is turn it exactly around, saying, we're going to put the downward pressure on government, and you have to have a reason to take it from the people. And for that, I appreciate it. I think this is a very good exercise. But how do we pull both ends against the middle? Before I can support this approach, I'm going to have to take a look at the budget, kind of what the ramifications are, because you're talking about $650 million on the average that is going to be cash unavailable any other way. So. And the one-third, two-third split needed to be brought out in kind of the open, as you had mentioned it before, of that 5% valuation that is available for appropriation, basically. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Senator Coghill. I've got a couple of technical questions, and I'm going to circle back to something Senator Rambel said before, because I agree with where she's headed on this or the concern. Just back to the charts to make sure, because you had created these, you said assumes draws from the ERA are limited to the proposed appropriations in addition to the POMV and inflation-proofing calculations. So just to be clear for the record, the charts that you have created for us on this particular example do include that. Is that true?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The graphics here represent the structured draw under the percent of market value approach and no additional draws.
But it has the inflation. I guess my point is inflation-proofing is included. But we haven't broached the topic of paying back CBR or SBR or other things with this at this time.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. These numbers are reflective of about $1 billion transfer from the earnings reserve to the principal account every year to account for inflation.
I'm going to shift gears for a second and ask this question, because it kind of circles back a little bit, like I said, to some other questions that were asked, and perhaps Commissioner Tangeman wants to jump in here. But so there is talk of other bills being introduced or resolutions that would join the earnings reserve account with the corpus, and you would have one silo with the draw still with the POMV market, I believe, is kind of the path. What and how would that affect this if that was to happen?
I won't speak to what proposals may or may not be being considered. I would defer to the commissioner for that, Mr. Chairman. But in terms of whether the funds were aggregated or not, in terms of how the numbers work, it wouldn't change anything at all. the principal account and the earnings account both, I mean, the percentage of market value is the combined funds anyhow, and the earnings, the statutory net income calculation that determines the permanent fund dividend is also earnings from both funds combined. So combining those funds wouldn't change the numbers. But I'll defer to the commissioner if he wants to address the other half of that question.
Yeah, and I just received a note, which is probably appropriate because I just broke my own rule, so I don't want this to turn to a finance meeting, not the goal. So, Commissioner Tangerman, you can cease and desist on answering that this time. I just know it's going to potentially be a problem and something we could probably address offline is fine and know how that might affect us if it was to happen. Thank you. That's kind of funny. Okay, so I do have a question that does circle back to what Senator Reinbold was talking about with SB 26, and if we take that market draw and we end up, let's just say with the budget, and I don't want to get into the numbers again and break my own rule a second time, but if we have to take more, it seems likely, based on a $3.2 billion starting budget, that that's probably going to go back up. Things will be added back in. If that happens, and this is more really for Commissioner Tangerman, it is likely that we are going to have to get that money from somewhere, and that's a part of this discussion that I think is germane to what we are looking at. So where would you foresee that coming from, Commissioner Tangerman, as we go beyond the $3.2 billion, which is currently what you're starting with? In other words, it's got to come from somewhere, right? So for the record, where is it coming from?
For the record, Bruce Tangerman, Commissioner, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, I don't think we're in a position to start talking about where the revenues will come from. Again, as I stated a little bit earlier, we need to have the conversation first around what the $3.2 billion budget or what the budget on February 13th will look like, what those services are, and then talk about in conjunction with how is it going to be paid for, but also what programs do Alaskans want added back into that 3.2. So, again, I don't want to get out in front and say we need to earn or we need to find a fund source in the private sector to take $500 million out of Alaskans' pockets. They need to have confidence that the budget has been reduced to an appropriate level that they would be willing to start entertaining tax discussions. And again, you're never going to get 100% buy-off. But right now, I think people understand that the $4.8 billion budget is not sustainable. So we're certainly not ready to start talking about individual new revenue streams as far as what might be available or what might be pursued. We currently don't have anything in the hopper right now as far as new revenue bills.
Nice deflection. That's okay. And it was very well done. But I guess I just want to make the point that it is most likely the case that we're not going to stay at a $3.2 billion budget. I think, you know, we can start from there. But I want to highlight, because as it was brought up, that as the money is taken out of this POMB draw, and that's what we have, as we get through the discussion later and figure this out, that money is going to come from somewhere. So the numbers we're dealing with are going to change, is my point. And they're going to probably go up, and that means that money will have to come out of somewhere, likely coming out of the earnings reserve account or depending on how we do it. I just want to throw that out there. Before I get to that one, one more question, a little structural, back to the actual bill itself. Have you thought about, and it's more of a why question, why you would have to be qualified in the current year to receive the dividend as opposed to kind of legally looking at it if you were qualified in 16 or 17 or 18, and let's say something drove you out of state, why would you not get it because you were qualified that year just because you're not here now? Because that was something that was owed you then, so why would we take it away from you if it was owed to you under the law? It seems to me we would want to pay that out regardless. So just a question for
Mr. Chairman,
structure
there. Yeah, there's no numbers there, so I'll deflect to the commissioner.
Good job.
I'd be happy to. Ed, thanks so much. Mr. Chairman, Bruce Tangerman, Department of Revenue. When you fill out your permanent fund dividend application, there's a little there's some fine print there, and it's not very fine, but it does say, I am currently in Alaska, and I intend to remain in Alaska. Again, it's intent language. It doesn't, you know, go any further than that. But the reason why we did this over 3 years, which really hasn't been asked, but it is an important point, is this was a three-year issue that our remedy is to fix it in 3 years. And there will be people that qualified in 2016 that are no longer here. We cannot, we're not proposing that we chase every single 2016 recipient to all ends of the earth to make sure they get their additional $1,000 deposited to them. We can only do what's feasible with the system we have. The 1 year payoff, another senator has a bill out there that proposes a make whole in this coming year. We wouldn't object to that if it made it to the desk. It's the point is still valid of making whole on this issue. We just think this allows for a glide path that allows the earnings reserve to continue to grow a little bit with the reserves that should have been paid out that still reside there. But one of the issues with an immediate make whole proposition is there could be somebody who qualified for the dividend in 20 that will be paid out this calendar year that left the state on January 2nd, just a couple weeks ago, with no intention of ever returning to the state of Alaska, and they would qualify for that full payment if it was made. Now, that same person under these bills would still qualify for a third of it, the 2016 and 2019 portion only, but at least the intent of if you were an Alaskan and did qualify or receive a dividend in 16 and you're still here and qualifying in 19, that's who we are really targeting this issue towards.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Tangerman.
Mr. Chairman, I just don't have much to add other than if we were to go down the road where we remove the eligibility requirement for the fiscal year 20, there are some technical aspects that the department or the administration should definitely work with the legislators on, especially around unclaimed property and with probate.
Copy that. Senator Ramble, I know you have some questions. Go.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say something about the total numbers for the budget. Since I've been here, it's roughly the total budget. If you add the mental health trust, the operating budget and the capital budget has been somewhere between $10.5 billion and $16 billion. So I just want the viewers to know that this $3 billion is just basically the POMB and the PFD that we're talking about. The total budget, I believe last year, was right around $11 billion, maybe
ballpark
area. But just so people know the whole total and entire budget. I know in 2014, I believe it was $16 billion total because we paid back $3 billion for the PERS and TERS. But anyway, just so it's not a $3 billion total budget. It's much, yeah, much, much larger.
Well
than
above
that.
And you add federal money and the rest of it. It's absolutely, yeah, true, and that's a good point. I have one more question. Personally, I think it sounds like we're kind of winded down here, although the good news is we are just getting started for the year. This is number one. And this may be more for, I believe, Commissioner Tangerman. Did you, since we're talking on a three-year kind of thing here, but for the public record and just for the purpose of discussion, did you model a two-year and a one-year option? And if so, could you speak to them and why you chose the three-year model, why you believe that's the best one? Just because I don't think we've really – you just mentioned it a minute ago about, hey, we wouldn't be adverse to a pay it all back this year. So if you modeled those, what led you to this conclusion and why not the others?
Mr. Chairman, Bruce Tangerman, Department of Revenue. We have not modeled those. It would be a very, very short exercise to get those if you'd like to see them, because these are, again, there's a lot of numbers have been thrown around this afternoon, but it is a quite simple calculation. So a two-year payback or a one-year payback would also be easy to calculate, and we could certainly get that to you.
I would appreciate that. Thank you. I think that would
help. And again, you know, just to reemphasize, the reason we're doing 3 years is to bring that in for a more gentle glide path and to make sure that, you know, Alaskans that qualified and intended to stay and are still here receive the maximum benefit from that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any further questions at this time? Okay, I would imagine, I know we have some thoughts as well from our office about possibilities of discussing amendments and changes, so, and I would imagine there's perhaps a few others here as well. So at this time, I'm going to go ahead and say thank you for your testimony today. We'll be calling you back, I would imagine, and perhaps legal and a few others here as well, and we will get on you with the schedule for that. And at this time, we're going to go ahead and set these bills aside. Public testimony will come a little bit later, and we'll get that scheduled out probably this Thursday.
And seeing that this concludes our business today, Senate State Affairs Committee will be meeting again Thursday, February 7th, in 2 days, 2019, at 3:30 p.m. in the Butrovich Committee Room back here. We'll be hearing Senate Bills 33 and 34, arrest, release, sentencing, probation, and then probation, parole, sentences, credit. So we're going to switch from PFD to the crime side of the equation. These will be those were Senate rules, by the way, by request of the governor. Seeing no other business in front of us today, we will adjourn and let the record reflect the time is 4:48.